Welcome to the Chief Strategy Officer Podcast, a collaborative space for the architects of corporate success, chief strategy officers. In today's interconnected world, no single leader has all the answers. Here, we foster a platform for knowledge exchange where executives who lead strategy can share their unique experiences in tackling complex challenges, navigating disruptive technologies, and driving impactful growth. The CSO role can be lonely and misunderstood, but what if there was a network dedicated to your success? Outthinker Network provides a supportive community of leading chief strategy officers, offering time-saving solutions, trend insights, and invaluable peer connections. Visit outthinkernetwork.com to unlock the full potential of your role.
As much as companies promise and commit to diversity, equity, and inclusion, the reality is corporate strategy, especially at the senior level, remains a male-dominated field. But some chief strategy officers have made it their mission to change that reality. In this episode, we hear from two of them, Alok Agrawal, CSO of Celestica, and Nicholas Chapman, former EVP and CSO of Teradata. Both have made tremendous strides in shifting the diversity levels of their strategy offices. Today's discussion is moderated by another diversity-focused strategy leader, Kalina Nikolova, Senior Vice President, Business Operation and Strategy at Yahoo. The CSOs will share the real hurdles they had to overcome to bring more diverse hiring to their strategy function. From them, you learn advice on how to set realistic objectives to support your D&I hiring initiatives, how to influence and work with HR to fill your hiring pipeline with more diverse candidates, and actionable steps to fight unconscious bias and make your job descriptions and interview processes more welcoming to diverse hires.
Thank you so much, Nicholas and Alok. Super excited to have this conversation with you today. Extremely curious to learn from you and have this discussion. I would love to dig into a little bit of how you do this. We all recognize the importance of it. We all think about some of the uniqueness of a strategy team. There's uniqueness in terms of kind of the typical skill set. There's uniqueness in terms of maybe the size of those teams, where they sit in the organizations. So with that in mind, how have you approached it? What specific steps have you taken to increase diversity on your strategy teams? Would love to hear about that. And let's start with Alok.
Sure. Kalina, Nicholas, glad to be here and have this conversation with both of you. So I think the way we picked it up as a company, Celestica is the company I work for, an 8 billion multinational. The focus, I think, has to primarily be on developing slates with diverse candidates, because that's where it starts, is having a pipeline of candidates from diverse backgrounds, diverse genders, diverse nationalities. And often, as is the case with a lot of companies who are at different parts of their diversity journey, it also depends where you're starting from. So Celestica, especially the strategy team, when I joined, was actually 0% diverse by, I would say, almost any measure, whether that was gender, whether that was visible minority, however you like to count it. So the challenge, frankly, is to get this moving, is when you're trying to find candidates who are diverse to come to a less diverse place, you have to maybe make an exceptional effort. So really, we started to do a couple things tactically. One is that we really targeted networking events where we could access different networks that would give us a good pipeline of diverse networks. And we did this in the market, so just general events, like in this case, in the Toronto market, where I hire quite a few people, but also university clubs. Go to Rotman, go to Queens, et cetera, and if they have consulting clubs, if they have women's clubs, et cetera, we would go there, do an event, we'd be visible. And when I say visible, including myself, the CSO, as well as my leadership team, to show everyone how serious they make it. And even now, I've even taken that one step further. What I found is that, frankly, because diverse candidates in some ways need to be sought sometimes, we need to actually go find them, I've personally reached out for senior roles on my team, at least on LinkedIn. So my recruiting team will help me find people, but I actually do the reach out myself and say, hey, listen, we're looking for the best candidates. It looks like you could be interesting for our team. And I think that showing that seriousness of me personally reaching out to that candidate over LinkedIn has helped a lot. It really gave a strong emphasis on how important diversity and inclusion were to my hiring. And then maybe one more point for it to hand over Nicholas for his perspective. I think the beauty of this is it creates what I call the flywheel effect, because once you recruit more diverse candidates and you see the better business outcomes, which I think come from diverse candidates, over time, then you'll get more diverse candidates, you'll see the results, and it just creates this benefit that helps grow and grow. And as I mentioned, when I started at Celestica, the team and strategy was 0% diverse by any measure. And today we're over 50% women, we're 90% visible minority, and that's everywhere, at every level of the team, actually, the senior roles, the entry-level roles, the mid-level roles. And there's always more to do. It's definitely a milestone I'm very proud of.
That is absolutely amazing. Congratulations. Come back to you. We'll dig in a little bit deeper. How about you, Nicholas? What was your how that was most effective?
I agree with everything that Alok said. And some of those things we did well, and some of those things I still want to do better. I agree with all of it. I think, at least in our case, and I'm speaking for Teradata, I'm not there anymore, but I'm talking about the Teradata experience. The first thing was to be clear on what we meant by diversity with a very specific definition. In our case, as a company and similarly as a strategy team, we didn't have a problem with some kinds of diversity, if you will. And so some non-white ethnic groups were represented very well in the company, some visible minority groups, and others not so well, and women also not so well. We made a conscious decision that in how we measure and track, of course, we want to increase all kinds of diversity, but in what we specifically measure and track and set goals on and have discussions about, we were going to tackle some groups first. Women, African Americans, Hispanic professionals, which were the greatest areas of gap to the market. And so we did do a market analysis of representation in the tech industry and in industry more broadly in the United States. The advantage of defining is it brings incredible focus to what you need to get done. The second thing is, I think, a mindset. You have to commit that you're going to do this because it might be hard. It's probably going to be hard. And unfortunately, in 2024, it is still often hard in all kinds of reasons. And you have to be in a mindset that you're going to get this done and that at some point you're going to make a bet on people. And you go into it with that. And then the third thing is to enlist all the possible help that you can. And so whether that's from the recruiting part of the HR organization internally and the expectations you set with them and how you manage that relationship, or leveraging your own network. So for example, early in my journey on this, it happened to be I reached out to many people in the Outthinker network, but I got a lot of help from Alok and Kalina in terms of recommendations for people to reach out to in their networks. So I would say that's a framing. Then there's specific practices that we developed the specific application of these practices for our company. They're not practices that we invented new to the world. They're in the literature. They're in practice out there. In terms of how to draft a JD, a job description that is likely to get responses from visible minority or other diverse candidates. Practices around the questions that you ask in the interview. Practices around the slate of interviewers who are going to interview the candidates. And then, of course, it's all about developing the slate and advancing the slate of diverse candidates, because in the end, it is a numbers game and more in, more probability of finding the right person. And in the end, you have the roles to fill, but you have to accept as a starting point for all of this that diverse candidates are not getting recognized in the market the way that non-diverse candidates are seen. And so you have to make an effort to recognize them, or nothing will ever change.
So you brought an interesting point that I think I just wanted to reinforce because I fully agree with it. Actually, two points you brought up that I wanted to reinforce because they're really good ones. One is this idea that as a lead, we talk about strategy, we're speaking about our experiences, obviously, but I think more broadly, this is not a strategy question. Diversity inclusion is a whole company question. I think what Nicholas said that resonated with me is, as a leadership team, whether that's your ELT or wherever leadership structure or wherever the change management is driven from, has to decide this is important. Because if you just simply say one function says it, or it's a priority number 10 of 15, it's going to be very difficult to actually make a change here. You have to make a conscious decision. You see the value of doing this and want to go do this as part of this. And two, I think you also have to accept, to Nicholas's point, that it's hard. I think a lot of people want to talk about the importance of doing this. And I think we all want to do the right thing. We all want to make our slates more diverse and hire more diverse candidates. But we all have to, as a team, agree that it's a corporate level priority. And we're going to invest the time and effort as a team to go do something about it, which is not always easy.
And that was the case at Teradata. It was a company-wide decision. And I don't know that it would have been impossible for me to do what I did without that company-wide decision. But it certainly would have made it an order of magnitude more challenging.
Amazing points. I do want to go a little bit deeper into the practices and the things that have worked well, maybe even some things that haven't. Let me maybe try and give you a lens to do that, which may help. I love how both of you brought up the thoughts about intent, the commitment to effort, and the definitions. It's very interesting to me that, yes, we do recognize the importance. We go into it with strategic intent, with commitment. And yet, we all also recognize that there is the unconscious bias part of this entire conversation and process. Inevitably, it's a challenge. I think the collective we of like strategists and leadership, we are much more conscious that we have it and much more intentional to working towards it. Maybe that could be an interesting lens for you to guys talk a little bit more about what has worked well. What has worked well specifically to address unconscious bias and maybe also highlight some other very effective practices that you have put in place. And maybe let's start with Nicholas on this one.
I think you have to accept as a starting point that everybody has unconscious bias. It's how we evolve. The reptilian parts of our brains take over when we are under stress. They snap to patterns. Patterns are good. Patterns are great. They let us recognize danger without learning danger each time, which could kill us. All good. The problem is that if you have grown up in an environment where there are not visible minorities in positions of power, you have recognized and internalized a pattern that visible minorities are not in positions of power. Everyone has unconscious biases, and you should and could do work all your life to uncover them, and you will still have some left. Every single person, every single man and woman, every single visible minority and non-visible minority has them. And if you have an understanding of that, and you can have a conversation where you accept that with your leadership team above, to the side, and below, that makes it a lot easier for this whole thing to be about how we mitigate everybody's unconscious bias. Okay, mitigating them. Have a standard set of interview questions and demand that the other interviewers on the panel have their standard set of interview questions. They can be different than your questions, probably are, but it's a standard set, because then you're asking each person and you decide the set in advance, and then you ask each person the same set of questions. And you have a set of answers against the same set of questions that can be compared. How did this person answer? How did this person answer? How did this person answer? One of the ways that unconscious bias creeps into interviews is people get asked different questions. For example, men get asked more so-called hard or technical questions about how they accomplish tasks. And women get asked more so-called soft questions or how they manage relationships. That's been documented. So then when you look across the answers, all the men have told you amazing things about how they accomplish tasks, and the women haven't. Next, the nature of the questions. Two things. First is, as close as you can get to the actual nature of the job being done, and not just describe how you do it, but show me you doing it. We rolled out case studies at the director level. The other thing is situational interview questions, which are like the thing across all companies. in the country slash world, you're trained in preparing your stories. Everyone has a great story. Every story is great. And you've ironed out all the little kinks of where this wouldn't make you look that good, or, oh gosh, maybe in hindsight, it could have done that differently. It's all ironed out. And it's not that it's untruthful. It's just ironed out and smooth. And so you don't end up learning a lot from that. So the other thing, the way you can try, you can never solve it, but the way you try to get behind that is that the question is, give me an example of where you had a very serious disagreement with a senior level peer. And I don't want the whole story. I just want, what was the disagreement about? How did you realize there was a disagreement? Please tell me the words that you spoke. When you said that, what were you thinking? Why did you say it that way? Then what did they say? What do you think they were thinking when they said that? You don't even get to the conclusion of it because it takes so gosh darn long. But even if you get into a few steps, oh, is this person having thoughtful reflections about the other person's position or not?
These were amazing. Alok, what do you want to build on that?
Yeah, definitely want to. So definitely what a lot of what Nicholas said resonates. I wrote a few down, actually. I had thought of some, maybe a couple I would add. So I definitely ask the same questions. I think that's a good way to, at least in your own mind, say, I'm asking the same questions. And that way I have I'm not unconsciously, because I agree with what Nicholas said. We all have unconscious bias, no matter how we think we are. That's why they're unconscious. We're often not aware of them. And so having rubric or a similar approach to interview at least will help us structure in the same way. The other thing, you know, I like to do, and this has helped a lot as interview, is panel interviews. Panel could be either together or not together. But when we interview, we try to obviously do myself. If I'm hiring the role, we also have, you know, people from the business, people from HR, obviously. We have this person, potential peers interview. We've had people who would work for this person interview. And the reason just there is that ideally you will have different conscious biases, not saying one will not have them, but that maybe gives, if you have four or five different people at different angles, that someone will have made sure that holistically we've gotten the whole story of the candidate and don't make the wrong call. Two, Nicholas touched on it, would be, we want to ask questions that are so open that we want to see how the candidate responds, because that allows us to see just how do they take a question that can go different ways. Will they take it in a technical direction? Will they take it in an EQ question? Will they take it in this company culture question? Whatever the case might be, actually gives a lot of insight into who they are. And the last thing I like to do, I would say, which I found is really effective, is especially with diverse candidates, when I see a resume, when I interview someone, I say, don't tell me about your resume. Tell me your story. Whatever you want to take that, right? Where'd you grow up? Tell me about your family. Tell me about the decision you made along your career. Because I think especially with diverse candidates, that is frankly, gives me a lot of context or the professional experience to what they've done, which is super helpful, is what I would say. I will say there's a few things I think I've done not well in this process, which I'm always trying to work on. But I think I've learned is one is that you can't always assume what I just talked about works with every culture. Sometimes there are just cultures where you might think, especially me being American based in the US, kind of a direct culture, right? We tend to ask questions very directly. If you're interviewing somebody, maybe not from that culture, not used to it, there's an unconscious bias in the way I might ask a question. I realize that they will answer in a way that's not comfortable with them. And it doesn't mean they're less qualified or they're not right for the job. It simply means I asked it in a way that they can't answer in a way I've realized there's a bias I have to go resolve. And second thing is, even though I ask an open question, we sometimes assume we know the right answer. And frankly, there's not a right answer. You may say, well, I want you to answer it this way. But that in itself is, I realize, through an unconscious bias. So not only do I think we have to force ourselves to have a structure, get different data points, but remind ourselves that the rubric or the approach we're using, though it is standardized and should be standardized, in our own culture, our own mindset. We have to be aware of that.
Thank you. And remind ourselves to listen. We're there to listen. Sure. Yes, for we do ask the questions, and we're there to listen with an open mind. Thank you for that. I want to go back to something both of you mentioned. You got a lot of help along the way. Can you give me a couple of examples? What kind of help did you get that was especially effective that you would recommend?
I'm happy to start then. Maybe.
Yes, please.
I think the biggest thing we can collectively do, one, like Nicholas mentioned, is talking to peers about the challenge. This is not a unique challenge, whether it be strategy or any other group, right? Certainly professional networks, talk about what other people have seen, the things they've learned about the approaches that they've worked and don't work, have been a huge value to me, definitely what I would say. Two is, I think, in my company and others, I look for the places where this has been successful, where they're ahead of where I'm at. Like, you guys seem to have a very diverse team and you seem to be having better outcomes. Learning from them, seeing what their case study is, what did they do, what they learned from that, I find is helpful. And that could be in your company. There are functions at Celestica who've also done this quite well before me. So I talked to them about what they did and how they did it. And frankly, understanding that story helps me communicate the story I was trying to build in my strategy team, but also be other functions as well, I would say. I think third, I mean, to your point, Clean, about listening, I think the more people you talk to with diverse backgrounds, just the better you appreciate where people may or may not be coming from. It's just having an openness to talk to people of different genders, of different, from different cultures, from different backgrounds, which I think in a strategy role, frankly, we, as part of the beauty of it, we get to do that already in our day-to-day job, just makes us better and more open to become self-aware of these unconscious biases and the best practices to get away from them or to resolve them.
Thank you. How about Nicholas? How did you get help that was most useful?
Wherever I could find it. So since it was a company-wide program to increase our diverse hiring, all of my peers on the executive leadership team were facing the same challenge. And so we'd talk to each other and trade tips and tricks of things that we were doing. One of my peers had developed some really good LinkedIn search threads that were working for her to identify people that included looking for people with particular sets of experiences who had started out at historically Black colleges and universities and other kinds of search threads. As I said, I leveraged this network and both of you for direct suggestions of people. I was hiring VPs of strategy, and that's someone who was at least like an associate principal. Kinsey, they call them associate principals. BCG and Bain, I think they're called principals, who had that experience or something equivalent to that experience, but not through consulting. That's a relatively senior level of person, and the pool isn't extremely enormous to start with, and networking is important to that. And then the third is, the HR organization was learning this along with everyone else. And to hire two VPs, I probably went through close to 1,000 profiles sent to me by HR over the course of many months. And so enlisting them in a joint effort of refining the kind of profile that we're looking for. And also at some points just saying, no, I won't accept this. And in your next set of 20, there will be at least 7 who are in the target groups and who are qualified. And if you don't have that, don't send me the next batch of profiles. And if that means you have to take an extra week or 10 days, that's fine. You can't take an extra month, but if you want to take an extra 10 days, that is fine. This is what we are doing. I will not accept it. I will send it back to you. You have to make it something different. Because if you don't make it clear that something's different, then people slip into believing it's just words and nothing changes.
And one thing to add, because I agree that the slate, right? Having HR or the recruiter come to you with a slate with diverse candidates is the ask, right? As a qualified candidate, that to me is a given. But yes, to Nicholas's point, X percent, whatever the number is, or some number I want to say are diverse to make sure I have a good slate is important. The other thing I've noticed, especially with senior level roles, it's often hard to find people from diverse backgrounds because if everyone is facing the same problem in the industry, unfortunately, the candidate pool as you get higher and higher tends to, unfortunately, be less diverse in a lot of cases. So we experienced that challenge too. So we made a more aggressive effort to, I would say, frankly, have exceptionally high diversity levels at the entry levels, knowing that we would be the ones that actually have to develop internally more of the senior people than we can't find the outside, which again, it's more work. That's certainly taking someone who's more junior and that's spending the time to develop them and retaining them and helping them grow within a company is difficult. But depending on the function you're in, the industry you're in, the location you're in, and the journey you're willing to take, again, it comes from the top. You may have to accept it is higher internally. Understand it will take 5, 6, 10 years to get them to the senior levels, but that's the most effective way to create the pool.
Just building on that, definitely face the same challenge One thing is, if you believe, as I do, and I think you should, that visible minority and other diverse talent has been not recognized in the industry the way it should over time, then there are people in diverse groups who are stuck at levels that they would otherwise have grown beyond. And so if under the old way of doing things, you said, I want someone who is at this level to consider them for this, we really pushed on that. And if you don't accept that people have not been seen the way they should, then this sounds like lowering the bar. You need to accept that people haven't been seen as they should. They have been held back unfairly in a system that has unconscious bias. If you don't accept that as a starting point, turn this off. You don't need to watch this anymore. This is not for you. You will not benefit. If you accept that as a starting point, it is not lowering the bar. It is finding people who meet the bar who have been hidden. And both of my VP hires in the last round coming out of this effort that I'm describing were people who I think had been stuck in director positions in their organizations for a number of years. I don't think they saw the opportunity for further advancement in those organizations, even though they were performing at a VP level and performing exceptionally well at a VP level.
Thank you both for highlighting that. That was literally going to be my next question. I'm going to ask it anyway, because I feel there's probably a little bit more to add to it. I was going to emphasize, once we have that commitment and the willingness to do the extra effort across all the levels in the organization, we will be looking at exactly this type of commitment, like extra effort, extra attention, extra support for advancement in the organization. And the willingness to potentially hire for a background that looks different from what we, quote unquote, traditionally have been looking for in consulting, strategy, et cetera, is such an important part of this equation. So with that lens, along the lines of what does that extra effort look like? What are you putting structurally around providing that extra effort, extra support, additional internal apprenticeship almost, maybe additional help going through different parts of the organization and learning stronger onboarding? Like, what does that look like? What are other like pieces of this puzzle you feel you may want to share to provide, again, that ability for people to get unstuck?
So I think it's a good point. So I think often people, again, not to say that it's easy to get to this point. You find a diverse candidate, you hire them, you track them to the company, you're able to sell them to come to the company. That's where the journey starts, frankly, right? Of then having to be successful in your company. And I think too often we and individuals, right, when you get back in the day-to-day of doing your own job and managing a team and all the efforts that an exec invests you in a company, forget that there's a lot more work to do. So a couple of things I think are good, I would say good hygiene, no matter who the employee is, but I think particularly for a diverse candidate who either one is going into a role they very much deserve, but maybe is going in a level that they haven't been at already, and or understand that they're entering a company with maybe a different set of biases than where they have come from. It's important to have an onboarding plan that makes it clear it's not just the typical CHR badge, et cetera. Onboarding in the sense of who should you go talk to, who should you get to know, who should you on the radar, just so they can see perhaps people who look like them, perhaps people who have had the same journey, et cetera, to make them feel part of to feel that they have people in the organization they can get to know and feel into relationships with from the get-go. Two, from a pure training standpoint, right? It's for Nicholas, I haven't changed notes on this actually about learning development programs, right? A lot of the work we've done leveraging from consulting, obviously the approaches we use around a lot of both quantitative and qualitative skills around finance, like corporate finance, negotiations, relationship building, all that kind of thing. We've done mentorship programs as well. A corporation has one as well. We've done our own where we match people to buddies in the company that either one, again, have maybe a similar background or have got a similar journey, certainly helpful. I think all that sort of good hygiene. I do think the thing that becomes more important, especially when you have a diverse candidate or someone who you think is a high potential. Now, this assumes they're performing, right? You don't want to give them those plush assignments just because they're diverse, but the diversity, you have a lot of hope for them to see the potential. You have to give them things that will highlight what they can go do. For example, if you have a really interesting project, let's say in strategy, or you sometimes get the big CEO level project about something major to do with the company, you have to say to yourself, I want to give that to somebody potentially diverse and give them a platform to go get visibility at the top levels to go do well and show what they can do. You have to make the conscious assignment as you do that to give them platforms like that. And I think that's where obviously the person has to earn that. You don't say do that day one, but you have to be ready to, I don't want to use the word favor, but you have to be willing to say, yes, I'm going to consciously go do that for them because I know that's going to be important part of the development. Not the cost of somebody else on the team, but maybe that somebody else on the team already has had the opportunity in their career, doesn't need it, or is on that radar. This is when you would give potentially a diverse candidate to along.
One thing you said, Alok, that I want to pick up on, it's a slightly different question, if you don't mind, Kalina. You said you were listing kind of the steps. You said sell them to come to your company. We've been talking a lot from the perspective of us doing the hiring. From the perspective of the candidate, they also have to decide to want to join, or else all your great practices aren't going to result in this addition to the team. And it starts, I think, right at the first time that the opportunity shows up for the candidate, which is some kind of a posting on LinkedIn, on the company site. And so we put a lot of effort into the job description. There is really good research that says that diverse candidates, and in this case, so all diverse candidates, but especially women, when they read a job description, they hold themselves to the specifics of the job description to a very high bar. So if I haven't done exactly that, I'm probably not qualified for this next. And non-diverse candidates actually do the opposite. Oh, I think that was close enough. Yeah, I can do that. Look, that was close. That's not close at all, but what the heck? I can do that too. And so the longer your job description is, the more stuff there is going to be that people can hold themselves to, even if it's really simple stuff. So we took our job descriptions from 2 pages down to between 1/2 to 3/4 of a page. And we up-leveled everything more to principles and directions so that people are able to see themselves in it and don't sort at the beginning. Shorter principles. And the other thing is, up front in the first line, talk about the company's commitment to seeing everyone's full potential and having diverse teams. This was a bit of a journey, because that literally started out as the last 2 sentences in the JD. That's how JDs look like a lot of the time. And so we said, no, we're going to say it up front. And it took 3 weeks of work, but we got it into the first line of the job description. And so the thing I do is I start every single conversation with, let me tell you about myself, and then I'll ask you to tell me about yourself. And then I say, now I'm telling you about myself. This is my family. That is my husband. And that is our baby. And we're expecting a second baby. And I'm from Canada. I worked in Taiwan. I was in consulting. I worked in this company, that company. And now most of my weekends are going to the zoo with this little guy. And with many diverse candidates, I can almost see like the sigh of relief. Okay, I know who I'm talking to now. I'm talking to a human being who cares about people. And they're more willing to be open in how they answer. They're more comfortable answering as their true selves. And they have the right impression of what the company is trying to do.
I'm glad you took us down this path. I think a couple of points I want to add to that. One is that, because eventually you want to switch to sign the candidate on your company, right? Obviously, it's always a two-way conversation. But I think what I found to be effective is in the interviews, be transparent about where the company is on the journey. So there's no surprise. Like, listen, we're not perfect. I'm not pretending we're perfect, but here's what we've done. Here's what we still have to do. And we are interviewing you because you're qualified. And that is not a question in our mind. But I am making a conscious decision that I want to hire a more diverse slate. And I want you to be aware of that. And I want to talk about that. You can ask me questions about it and where you're at. Because some candidates, and I fully understand, say, listen, I don't want, that's not where I'm at mentally. I don't have the energy or the interest in being the potentially the trailblazer in a company and being the first or whatever. I wanted to go somewhere else. And I totally understand that. And it's good to be transparent about it up front. I think also the benefit of doing it that way is even if it doesn't work on either side, the candidate's not working the right fit for you or vice versa, the reputation you have in the industry, that candidate talks to other candidates like, hey, this is a great company. I was amazed how they treated me and the way they talked about it. That in itself changes the way you can be perceived in the marketplace because candidates talk, and there's all kinds of websites. You can see what candidates talk about the companies. And that kind of helps that flywheel to go forward is that every interview is almost an opportunity to be ambassador of your company's DEI strategy, no matter who the candidate is or what happens. That's frankly the way you should treat each conversation.
Love all of those points. Transparency, being candid about it, ambassadors. Really great segue to, I almost want to go like full circle back to the very beginning of the conversation. This is important. This is really matters for all the reasons you've mentioned throughout. Would you point to maybe some specific benefits that you have been able to observe, maybe even measure or gotten feedback on? Did you have a few that you would like to share with us?
Yeah, I'll go first. The diverse candidates that I have hired have been very willing to question orthodoxies very productively and start new conversations as a result of that. And within a couple weeks, I started getting exceptionally positive feedback about these people, about the way they question things and about the way that they engage. And I don't know that it is because they were diverse candidates, but I think it has something to do with it.
Yeah, I would add to that. I agree. I think that especially the nature of strategy work is you're frankly a lot of time trying to predict the future. You're trying to figure out, well, 3 to 5 years or depending on your planning horizon, what's the world going to look like? And I think the more diverse thoughts, diversity of in every which way, right? You can bring to that table of different perspectives, questions to ask about why do you presume it's going to be this way? I came from this industry or, hey, my background is this and I would think about it this way is hugely helpful. The other piece I think is when it comes to implementation, when you're actually in the stage of saying, we analyze the market, figured out a strategy, have initiatives, now we want to go translate to operationalize to do something. I think I found the diversity of thought brings in a better understanding of where people will be coming from culturally. Hey, in China, they're going to think about this. Or hey, from my background, I might think about this. Or hey, if I'm from an operation function versus HR function, diversity, here's how I would think about it. And having that different set of mindsets as you think about implementation lets you know where there might be flags of things you should really think about how you're going to approach. It's hard to put a number. That's always the thing I think a lot of people want to, as all good corporate executives want to put a number against and say, what's the benefit? The only number I can point to, but again, it's hard to connect it directly to diversity because we do lots of things. So that our employee satisfaction on the strategy team has increased noticeably since I joined, right? And I have to believe that diversity is part of it because again, it just doesn't tend to work. If you have a diverse group when you go out for dinner, when you go out for social, it's just a different feeling on the team, right? Just more people to talk to, more interesting experiences to share. It just makes people happier and like each other better, and I think be happy at their jobs. So I don't, even though sometimes we maybe make this too complicated as a world, why this is important, I think there's enough first principles or intuition suggests it is, and enough anecdotes or examples to suggest that the results have been.
Amazing. I can keep this going for hours. Such a wonderful conversation. Extremely helpful. I was like literally charting in my head the Gantt chart, the roadmap of here's all the pieces of the puzzle that can be considered and could work well. Let's maybe wrap up with that. Like for those that are listening and they're taking notes and they're like, oh my God, so they're all such wonderful ideas and they want to follow your footsteps. What to focus on first? What would you say? Definitely make sure you get this one. And then the rest of it follows a little bit more easily. What would you start with? And let's maybe go with the log first.
So yeah, a couple of things I would just say for anyone, no matter where you are and you're thinking about this, it's a journey. So just, you have to accept, you're not going to say, I commend people for going on this journey, but it's going to take a while. It's going to be many steps. It's going to be changing mindsets, changing the way people view hiring, the way they interact with people maybe across the company. I think the important thing to pick up is just like any good journey, just take it one step at a time, take a few actions, see the results and do more and more. if I had to say, and it depends where in the journey as a company, right? But I think for me, if I was starting early on in my journey, I think the number one thing is to make a conscious decision with the leadership team. And leadership team could be your function, the whole company, whatever the case might be. But you can't do it alone. You can't say as a single person at a company or single executive, I just simply want to do this. Because again, if you try to attract the candidates that come in and you're the only person carrying this, the banner of this is important to me, it's a disservice to you and a candidate. So I think you have to just, as a function or as a group, the leadership level, agree this is important. And then I think hopefully the actions that we've talked about will help you get started tactically. But that sort of cultural or that decision, that intent to go do it, I think is the most important first step.
Ah, you stole mine.
Great minds.
And I think the people who have to be, like, just like you said, the people who have to be in the coalition are your boss, a couple of your peers at least, and HR. In a company of any size, you're not going to get the engine to work without HR being on board. A couple of your peers, mainly so that you're not standing out and getting pressure as a result. And potentially that also helps with your boss. I was very fortunate that the diversity program at my company started with the CEO and the head of HR, and then all of us were recruited into it. That's not the case. Your boss, if that's the CEO or if that's someone between you and the CEO, has to be on board. They don't have to adopt it as their program. They have to be on board with you doing it. And everyone's at a different point, at a different starting point in this. And so probably need to figure out where they are in their mental model of what diversity is and start with them there and take them wherever you are. Alok, you referred to our training programs, how you influence people. You find it where they are and you get them to the next spot, just the razor edge next spot. And then you get them to the next spot. If they're here and you want them here, you can't just have a debate about here. That'll look like national politics. Nothing will change.
Make them a little uncomfortable, but not too uncomfortable. Yeah, that's right.
Right. A little uncomfortable, not too uncomfortable. Yep. And you get them to a good enough spot that they support you in this. Because if they don't, something will happen and it will not end up good. And you also can't do this expensive damage to yourself, right? Not because you're the only important person in the world, but if you're not there, then you can't continue this work. So have enough of a coalition that someone has your back.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your insights. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for being ambassadors, as you said. And on behalf of myself, all of our listeners, this has been such a wonderful conversation, so helpful. Really appreciate you guys sharing all of your learnings, and let's all of us continue this on this important journey.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Chief Strategy Officer Podcast. To join our community of strategy leaders, visit outthinkernetwork.com/apply. Until next time, let's keep the conversation going and rewrite the future of strategy together.